From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
Since the November election, change has indeed come to America. Not only to the White House, but also to California. On this week's program, Latino reaction to Proposition 8, the California ban on same-sex marriage.
We do need to have a discussion about that. We can't be a community that advocates for equality on different levels except when it comes to Latinos who are gays and lesbians and their interest in becoming married and building families.
Also, Thanksgiving recipes and the psychedelic Latin-infused Afrobeat of Ocote Soul Sounds. This and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community this week is Maria Elena Salinas, national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. Hey, Maria Elena.
Hi, Maria. Nice to talk to you.
All right, let's talk about this story out of Kentucky. And I'm actually fascinated with some things that are coming up around the KKK and its presence post the Obama election. But in this particular story, 16-year-old Jordan Groover has been awarded $2.5 million in damages from the Ku Klux Klan. A jury found that Klan members wrongly had targeted, he's a U.S. citizen of Panamanian and Native American descent. What's the legal proceeding here? What happened here?
Well, it was clearly a hate crime, Maria. I mean, definitely it wasn't. It was a horrible experience for this young guy, Jordan Groover. He was only 16 years old when this. So, you know, I guess it seems that by making the group pay those $2.5 million, a group could be broken up. You know, at least the facilities where they operate could be confiscated. I understand they have acres of land there, and they are pretty protected. Now, the interesting thing about this is that this was a trial, this was a jury, and the jury was made up of 14 white people, 7 men and 7 women. So, you know, they sent out a clear message that, you know, hate crimes and racial violence is not going to be tolerated.
So, Maria Elena, some people might hear this and they say, well, you know, it's Kentucky, whatever. We don't like to say that, but there might be some people who say that. But unfortunately, we have another report of one of these attacks happening on the East Coast, not far from where I live in Patchogue, Long Island, New York. There was a 37-year-old Ecuadorian immigrant who is dead because of this. What happened here?
You know, according to the information that's provided, there were a group of teenagers in New York who were drinking beer, and they decided to, hey, why don't we just go out and attack a Mexican? So, you know, it seems like there's some confusion because they attacked an Ecuadorian. But the issue here is that Latinos are specifically being targeted in this one and so many other incidents. And, you know, what is sad is that among this particular group of attackers, there was also at least one Latino, and I believe there might have been up to two Latinos. So, you know, it's Latinos attacking Latinos. So, you know, there's been a lot of racial tension in this particular county, and you should know you live very close to there in Suffolk County. And, you know, the tensions in this particular area come from high unemployment, a resentment towards undocumented immigrants, day laborers who hang out on the corners waiting for work and sometimes get it. So this, I guess this is just sort of like the culmination of all these tensions that have been building up.
I mean, do you get a sense now that some of these local authorities are looking at this a little bit more seriously, where previously they might have been downplaying it? Is there some kind of a shift in terms of more reporting about this stuff so that word gets out there? What's your sense?
The fact is that some of these attacks are directly targeted to Latinos, and that some of these cases, you know, they've ended up being U.S. citizens of Latino descent. So, you know, whether they're undocumented or they're here legally as residents or U.S. citizens, it's clearly attacks against Latinos, whether they're undocumented or not. Nothing really justifies these types of attacks.
Maria Elena, let's talk about a different education story out of Texas. The Dallas public school system assigned false social security numbers when they were hiring teachers for bilingual education programs. It's even hard for me to say this. So the Dallas public school system is giving out fake social security numbers knowingly. What's the story behind this story? And this is distressing on so many levels. Just the thought of how many people would like to be working as teachers and the fact that they can't legally do it is just, you know, distressing in and of itself.
Yeah, it is a very tough one because the school district is part of the government and, you know, what kind of punishment are you supposed to give them in case like this? But it just goes to show you how both our education system and our immigration system are broken, that we can't expedite the proper documentation for teachers that provide a much-needed service, you know, one that cannot easily be filled by a U.S. citizen. So you're absolutely right. It's amazing that this is happening. It's amazing that we can't find qualified people to do these jobs, and that when we do find qualified people, even if they are foreigners, that we cannot expedite the permit for them. I guess, you know, this is one of the things that I think the new government is going to have to take a look at after January 20th. Remember that education definitely is supposed to be one of Barack Obama's priorities after fixing the economy. So let's hope he takes a look at things like this and realize that, you know, we can't go on because it's the immigration system they need to fix, and now it's blending into the education system.
Thanks, Maria Elena.
Thank you, Maria.
Maria Elena Salinas is the national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish language television network. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. What do you think of when you think of marriage? The white gown, the wedding cake, something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue, or something not quite as traditional, but still a marriage?
Usually, at this point in the ceremony, I pronounce, by the power vested in me, that I hereby pronounce you wed. But I think instead, with the blessings of your friends and family gathered here, now pronounce you partners in life, married in the spirit of love. Congratulations.
Marriage is the coming together of two people for a new beginning. And since November 4th in California, that union can now legally only be between a man and a woman. Since Proposition 8 passed in California, hundreds of thousands have demonstrated nationwide in support of same-sex marriage. This week, the oldest Spanish-language newspaper in the country, New York's El Diario La Prensa, ran an editorial stating that Latinos, who have fought hard for equal rights, must rally around a sector of their community that remains even more discriminated against, gays and lesbians. We're joined now by Erika Gonzalez, opinion page editor for El Diario La Prensa. Welcome to Latino USA, Erika.
Thank you, Maria.
Let's talk for a minute about what happened in California. 53% of Latino voters in California supported Proposition 8, basically making same-sex marriage illegal. So the Latino vote, along with the African-American vote, were very much in support of getting rid of gay marriage, which raised all kinds of issues in terms of civil rights for everyone, not just based on race or ethnicity.
You know, there are people in our community, among other communities, who believe that marriage should be between a man and a woman. But again, and this is what we say in the editorial, the belief has to be separated from what is a right to be married, to be a couple, to receive the same treatment, respect, and standing that heterosexuals take for granted. So there needs to be a separation of religion and rights, and also there needs to be, in terms of an honest discussion, there needs to be an understanding that a gay rights agenda also has to reflect the specific challenges for LGBT Latinos. For example, an LGBT Latino who's dealing with an immigration issue or a partner who's in an immigration issue, their scenario, their situation is all the more complicated. There were also questions about how outreach was done in California, about the engagement, about also what gay marriage translates into for gay couples of color who are struggling with a number of issues, a number of inequities. So I think all of those need to be factored into a larger discussion as this issue continues to be debated.
And just finally, Erika, do you have a copy of the editorial right there in front of you?
I do, Maria.
Would you mind reading me the part that says, that sentence that says, it says something like, as Latinos, we should identify with our, you know, with people who are...
Right. Latinos have fought too hard and long against discrimination. This is why we must rally around a sector of our community that remains locked out of the right to marry.
So essentially what you're saying is, if you as a Latino have ever felt like you've been discriminated against, if at any moment you have felt that way, then you have the kind of moral, historical responsibility to identify with somebody who is gay, who is discriminated against in any way, shape, or manner.
Exactly, Maria. And in this educational discussion, ongoing discussion, and if it's spelled out in the sense of my son or daughter or my relative or my neighbor who is not able to access certain benefits and rights and a standing because of the approach people are taking, I think it'll reach more people. If it's framed as a civil rights issue, as something that, as a standard that we need to have, and as something that affects people's day-to-day lives in very real and many times painful ways.
Okay, thanks a lot, Erika.
No problem. My pleasure.
Erika González is the opinion page editor for El Diario La Prensa, the oldest Spanish language newspaper in the United States. I'm a traditionalist, in terms of the Thanksgiving meal, that is. My Mexican mom learned the traditional meal, and I've just basically gone ahead and kept it up. This year, I'm going to be doing it all again. I'll be buying my organic turkey this weekend and hoping that I get it right. It usually works. Anyway, a young woman we introduced you to a while back is named Nancy Trujillo. We interviewed her for a story we did about being young and Mexican in New York City. Now, Nancy Trujillo is a first-year student at Barnard College here in New York City, my alma mater, in fact, and she helps my kids with their homework after school. Nancy told me an interesting story about her Thanksgiving, and I asked her to write it for all of you.
Ever since I could remember, at home, we would celebrate Thanksgiving. It was a holiday that my parents did not know about when they came to this country 20 years ago. They had absolutely no knowledge of what to eat or even of why Thanksgiving was celebrated. Growing up, my mother would always help Doña Elvia cook the turkey. She was more than the landlord of the house. She became a grandmother to me. She was a Honduran immigrant who had lived in this country for many years. She told my parents that as new Americans, we should learn about my culture. Because of Doña Elvia, we celebrate Thanksgiving. My mother's cooking of the turkey has elaborated ever since, and she makes sure that she adds a Mexican flavor to it to remind us of where we came from.
So, I guess that's what is so intriguing about Thanksgiving and about the meal. It basically can change with every cook, every family, and even with every country that we come from. New immigrants both embrace Thanksgiving, and a lot of them toss out what doesn't work for them. So, we called Maricel Presilla. She's a culinary historian and owner of two restaurants in New Jersey, Safra and Cucharamama. Maricel, welcome to Latino USA.
Hola, Maria. How are you?
I'm good, good, good. Okay, so the interesting thing, Maricel, is that in my family, we came from Mexico, but my mom, she kind of did the traditional thing. But for you, Thanksgiving really is a time to just say, go ahead and mix it up. So when Cubans prepare a turkey, how do you do it?
We were seduced by the whole idea of cooking a turkey. You know, you can avoid the commercials for Thanksgiving. This is a golden turkey. And it reminded us of the turkey we used to cook for New Year's Day in Cuba. Sometimes we roast the turkey, but most often we braise the turkey in a large cauldron. It was very beautiful and juicy. And we marinated the turkey, you know, with our typical marinade, adobo. So it's just a wonderful, wonderful, tasty marinade that really made the turkey very juicy. We never had a problem with dry turkey.
Maricel, you talk about adobo. What is it?
Simply a marinade. It could be sort of a drier rub, but it could be very liquidy. And usually it has an acid component. It could be vinegar. It could be the juice of bitter oranges. Or it could be a combination of lime juice and orange juice. And then normally most Latin American adobos have a lot of garlic. And every country and every cook adds a number of spices. In my case, it would be cumin and allspice and oregano. And in many cases, you would have an addition of some pepper. In Mexico, it would be a dried chile that has been toasted and reconstituted. In Peru, it would be an ají, a dry ají, like ají mirasol or ají panca, again, that has been lightly toasted and soaked in water to be reconstituted and ground to a paste. And I make a sauce with agua de Jamaica with hibiscus. And it's just a delicious combination. So you have these cranberries and nuts, you know, inside the apples. I bake these apples with this, you know, concentrated and reduced sweetened agua de Jamaica, and makes it just a beautiful sauce for the apples. So imagine, you know, the apple juice and the Jamaica mixing and giving flavor and acidity to the apples. And they look beautiful.
And I'm sure that there are people who are thinking, I want to know how to do this. We are going to have your recipes available, and we'll give your website. Thank you so much, Maricel.
Gracias a ti.
Maricel Perecilla writes a regular column for the Miami Herald, and you can find her at themiamiherald.com, also at maricelperecilla.com. Shoot us an email, and we'll send you one of Maricel's recipes.
My dad used to have a state-of-the-art alarm clock, and I feel old describing it to you. It would play music and wake you up. And it had an incredible feature called the sleep button. You could hit it, music would play, and 29 minutes later, it would actually turn off. It was amazing.
Commentator Antonio Sacre.
I love sitting in my parents' room, listening to the music that played on the only station my dad listened to before bed, WJBR, Just Beautiful Radio. It played only classical music 24 hours a day. My dad would hit the magic sleep button. The music would start, and I would watch the little plastic tabs click off time until it was time for bed, but hopefully not before the sleep timer did its thing. My dad would often stand transfixed in front of the radio. I always thought he was looking at the numbers as well, but he would close his eyes, sway very slightly, and say, "Mijo, can you hear that?" I'd strain toward the radio. "What?" I asked. "That, right there, and there again, there, right on top of the piano, the violin." I couldn't hear anything. "And now the clarinets and the drums rolling in the back like thunder over the hills. It reminds me of Cuba right before a storm. Can you hear that?" I could never hear anything he heard, but I loved watching him go to the place where the thunder rolled over the hills. The only time he ever talked about Cuba was when he listened to classical music, but then the sleep button would do its thing and he would scoop me up and bring me to my room. When I got older, my dad gave me that radio. I asked him what I should listen to, and he said whatever I wanted. Over the course of the next few months, I listened to every radio station on the dial for 29 minutes a night, listening to pop and country and late-night baseball broadcasts from far away, but none seemed as mysterious and as beautiful as the classical music station that transported my dad back to Cuba. I began to listen to it, and while I never heard drums rolling like thunder over the hills, I pretended like I could, hearing something that only adults could hear. And the complexity and the beauty of the music would make me forget about time falling down, and I would fall asleep. Now that I'm older, I can hear the drums underneath the violins, and the swelling music reminds me of egrets landing in shallow water. I hope that when I have a child, I will stand in front of the radio, or whatever new music-playing device we'll have then, and say, "Mijo, can you hear that? The piccolo over the strings, like butterflies landing on flowers?" No? When you get older, you will.
Antonio Sacre is a performance artist and writer based in Los Angeles. In a minute, the psychedelic, Latin-infused Afrobeat of Ocote Soul Sounds, coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan.
Support for Latino USA comes from Caso Bracero. Benefits are available to braceros who worked in the U.S. from 1942 to 1946 or their survivors in the U.S. Information at 877-436-9359 or casobracero.com. Thank you.
You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Sometimes bad luck can turn out to be a good thing. Don't believe me? Well, just ask Martin Perna. In late 2004, the Brooklyn-based musician and founder of the Antibalas Afrobeat Orchestra set out on a biofueled trip to Mexico. But he didn't quite get that far. Martin Perna broke down in Austin, Texas. And luckily, he was far from stranded because Adrián Quesada, a member of Austin's Grupo Fantasma, took Martin in. Jam sessions over the next few weeks resulted in inspiration for a new album and a new group under the name Ocote Soul Sounds. The chemistry between Martin Perna and Adrián Quesada worked so well that the duo has returned with a new album appropriately named The Alchemist Manifesto. We're joined now by Martin Perna from our studios in Austin, Texas. Welcome to Latino USA, Martin.
Thank you so much, Maria. Good afternoon.
Okay, so for people who need to be in the know, you actually wear a lot of different hats, and you are the founder of a group that we've reported on here. It's called Antibalas. And that's a wild group of how many musicians?
Between 11 and 16, depending on if we're in New York or if we're abroad.
And it's a huge big band, raw, brassy sound with a lot of African mixed up, African rhythms and beats, right?
Very much so.
And then you move to a totally different sound. I think the word texture is really one that applies for the music from this new CD. I mean, there's just a real, you really want to kind of transport your listeners to a space, right? I mean, it really feels like a space. And I'm thinking about the name Ocote, which is from Nahuatl, which is the mother tongue of the Aztec area of Mexico. It also means pine trees. So Ocote, pine trees, transporting to another kind of world out there. Am I on the right track here?
Very much so. The Ocote, one of the things that's magical about the Ocote is that, as you're probably familiar, you can go to a market and buy little bundles of it, and that's the kind of wood that you use to get the fire started, that you use when you're cooking by lumbre with other logs, and the Ocote can even be used to get wet logs or logs that don't want to burn. It can get those logs to burn. So there's this idea of nature, the heartwood of this pine tree catalyzing something, getting the fire started.
Why a Nahuatl word?
A lot of it is our roots to Mexico, to another time, to another way of doing things, and to a way of doing things that people are still doing, but that's getting sort of crushed or swept aside in the steamroller of modern times and modern technology. So with this group, we try to reconcile that. You know, we try to reconcile our past, our origins, with the world that we're in right now. We're living right close to the border. Adrián is from Laredo. And so a lot of these sounds are border sounds. They're in between the space between the modern world, the folkloric world, technology, and root sounds. And we're just trying to make sense of it. So each record that we make is us reconciling this moment in the present, not trying to deny one or trying to deny the other, but trying to make something that is authentically where we are right at this moment.
One of the things that I like about the CD is that you're also bringing in like these different perspectives. So, for example, the song El Pescador, mm-hmm. you know, you go into this this canto, which, you know, one would sing for the orishas or the goddess Yemaya, who is part of the Yoruba or Santeria tradition that comes from West Africa and Cuba. And so you're singing that as part of the song El Pescador, but it's also got, you know, this hip-hop drum beat going on. So talk about how you put that song together and where your passion for Yemaya comes into play.
Well, the fact that the beat underlying it is that, you know, just because we're in a modern era where hip-hop is dominating the airwaves and these big beats underneath, that we can't sever our connection with the old songs of the past and with the orishas. And so I think different people in this day and age are successfully linking those traditions, and we're a part of it in that way.
So when you think about the future of Latinos, like you know, who you've got this mixed background, you've lived in all different places, you practice an Afro-Cuban religion, and that you live in Texas. So when you think of the future, Martin, what does the future look like in terms of Latinos?
Before, I think Latinos can really move forward in the United States to a degree of true success, true happiness. We have a lot of baggage and politics to work out amongst ourselves and to realize that we're bound by a history of colonialism, of slavery, of conquest, but we're united by things that are even more transcendental: language, just different ceremonies, traditions, food, comida, rhythm, that we need to travel and begin to look beyond what's immediately around us in order to appreciate things. Because coming to the United States, people are lumped into these different categories that they didn't even know that they were going to be lumped into coming in. And that's part of this very strange, disorienting immigrant experience. So even though I was born in the States, it's happening to people right all around me. And so collectively, we need to try to make sense of it so that everybody is moving forward. There's not people left behind or people left on the other side of the fence, or that there are fences at all.
Martin Perna is one half of the duo Ocote Soul Sounds. Their new album is The Alchemist Manifesto. It's available from ESL Music. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. We had help this week from Lily Percy. To listen to our podcasts, go to latinousa.org or look for us on iTunes. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by the Department of Homeland Security, offering E-Verify, confirming the legal working status of new hires, at dhs.gov/e-verify, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Details are at gatesfoundation.org. And by Lumber Liquidators, Hardwood, Bamboo, and Cork Flooring, catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. This is NPR, National Public Radio.